Good morning, brethren.
Good morning, Mr. Gilbert.
Some of us can recall, or at least we learned in history class, that immediately following World War II, the country of Germany was divided almost in half, right down the middle, so to speak. The Soviet-occupied territory of Eastern Germany became Communist East Germany, or the Deutsche Demokratische Republik, DDR for short, while the remainder became West Germany, a free country. Now, throughout history, a number of cities and even some nations have built walls for protection, walls to keep enemies out, to protect them from invasion. But East Germany became the only country in the history of the world to build a wall to keep citizens in, and rather than out. And as unbelievable as it may sound, that wall, or that barrier rather, extended for 836 miles. Quite a barrier. 836 miles, that's as far as it is from here to Dallas, Texas, and a couple of hundred miles beyond that. It was a very long border. And it was virtually impenetrable. And when I say that, I mean this. It consisted of barbed wire fences and mesh fences, strips of plowed ground that vehicles could not travel over. It even had vehicle traps. And along that border, there were anti-personnel mines. As a matter of fact, they were installed along about half of the border's length, and there were as many as 1.3 million Soviet-made SM-70 mines, and they detonated a horn-shaped container of shrapnel, and the triggers were attached to tripwires, and these tripwires were strung along the length of that section of border where they were, and those things were lethal to a range of 390 feet, so well over the length of a football field. If you tripped one of those wires, a blast of shrapnel would wipe you out. Much of the border was illuminated at night. There were numerous watchtowers with searchlights along the way. Many areas were guarded by vicious dogs, even German shepherds of all things. But even more shocking is that border was patrolled by 60,000 machine gun toting East German soldiers with orders to shoot to kill anybody caught within the range of that border. You know, it took a lot to contain a country of people who were waiting or wanting freedom instead of the virtual slavery that they had to live in under the communist domination that they were under. Actually, as this barrier was being constructed, and afterwards even, as many as 80,000 people fled from East Germany into West Germany seeking freedom. And unfortunately, during the 45 years that this inhuman thing existed, it is estimated that about 1,000 people were killed trying to cross that area from East Germany into West Germany. Many people tried to make a dash for it by running and hoping to skip and miss the bullets or shrapnel or whatever other traps or mines and whatever that were there. Some of them even had special devices that they attached to the front of their shoes where they could climb the fences to get across trying to get to freedom. One person even built a little mini submarine and sailed around in the edge of the Baltic Sea from east to west Germany, out of sight. One woman even swam that same route to freedom. It took her over 40 hours. I don't think I could swim that long, 40 minutes maybe. But let me tell you about a couple of men who devised a plan to escape by a very unusual manner. Peter Strelzik and Gunter Wetzel resided with their wives and children in the town of Poschneck, East Germany. They were both fairly well off, at least by German standards at that time, East German standards. They were technically educated. Both of them were tinkerers. They liked to make things and solve mechanical type puzzles and that sort of thing. But they and their wives wanted out of what they called a hermetically sealed workers' and farmers' republic. Strelzik said, "The hypocrisy of the whole system in the East repelled us. You are subject to constant propaganda and lying. You are not free to read what you please, to say what you think, or to travel anywhere except to other communist countries, and not always that. Worst of all, it turns your children into opportunists and hypocrites." They knew that their chances of crossing the border were by a surface route of any kind, by any means, was very slim. They had heard the stories of the thousands or hundreds at least who had tried it and died in their attempts. So when they got acquainted and decided that they had this one goal in common, that they very definitely wanted to get themselves and their families out of East Germany and into freedom, they got together and talked about different possibilities, and one day one of them came up with the idea of, let's build a balloon and sail over the border. And the other thought that sounded like a good idea, so that became their plan. Neither of the guys knew anything about balloons. Who does? But they were determined. They started reading everything they could get their hands on about balloons and ballooning. They descended upon the only used bookstore in their little town, and of course the library, and as I said, read everything they could about it. And being mechanically inclined, they were able to do a lot of figuring and employ their ingenuity. So they came up with a figure that the people, the two guys, their wives, one teenage son, and the other's two daughters, those together with the gondola or little platform attached to the bottom of the balloon that they would stand or sit on, along with the blower and the heater for the hot air to fill the balloon, and all of that would weigh about 1,650 pounds. So they needed a balloon to lift that much weight. And they figured to do that, plus the weight of the balloon, that it would require a volume of over 70,000 cubic feet. That's a big balloon. As a matter of fact, such a balloon would require almost 9,000 square feet of material to build it out of. So the question became, where do we get 9,000 square feet of material to build a balloon? Well, they were able to go to a nearby town and, believe it or not, obtain that much material, that much cloth to build their balloon. They had to pretend a little bit. Somebody, of course, a suspicious clerk said, "What are you going to do with all this much material?" And they replied that they belonged to a camping club and that this was going to be tent liner material. So that satisfied them, and there was no more suspicion about that. Wetzel then, once the material was obtained, began sewing that material together. They had to cut it into pieces of the proper size, And all he had was one of those old-time foot pedal sewing machines. But he sat at that sewing machine and sewed those panels together until every day and up into the night, until his hands and his feet became so tired and so swollen and sore that he could not continue. And he did this as long as it took, and finally was able to construct a bag that was 50 feet wide and 66 feet long. And during this time, Strelzik, the other fellow, had built a gondola or platform and a burner system. And then they spent several days scouring the countryside looking for a place to test it, and finally found a little clearing in the woods a few miles from their hometown. And they took it out, fired everything up, started pumping the air into the balloon, and it just would not rise. And of course, they were really frustrated, but they drug the whole thing over to a cliff and dropped it off the cliff and with part of it still hanging up, and tried to pump it that way where it would have less lift to have to do. That didn't work either. So they had to kind of give up for the time being. But they went back and planned a little more, and they devised a new burner with a blower on it that they made from a motorcycle engine. And it seemed to work pretty well, so they went back and tried the new apparatus, and it still didn't work. It seemed as the material they had was just too porous. It would let the hot air through, and it did not work. It just didn't have enough power to work. So they knew they had to have a different type of material, which means they were going to have to start all over as far as building the balloon. But they checked around and tested some other different types of fabrics and settled upon a type of taffeta. They had to travel 100 miles to the nearest town that had that kind of material. And they did it, though, and were able to buy enough to come back, and they also got the bright idea of putting a little electric motor on that sewing machine. So that made the construction a little easier. But they built another balloon. They had to work all through the winter and the spring. And as a matter of fact, when they got that sewing machine and rebuilt the balloon, they took it back to that same clearing and tested it, and it still would not lift. Wetzel quit. He'd had enough. I mean, if you think about it, putting all that effort into it and nothing to show for it. But Strelzik kept on. He worked through the winter and the spring. He rebuilt the burner system. And then on the night of July the 4th, 1979, Strelzik and his family headed to the clearing. The rebuilt burner system worked very well, and the balloon ascended to 6,600 feet. That's over a mile up in the air in just a very short time. And the wind was blowing the balloon toward West Germany, so everything was really working out well. But they entered into a cloud. And when they did, the moisture in that cloud condensed on the fabric of the balloon and weighted it down, and it sank slowly to the ground. You know where they landed? Right in that no man's zone, in the middle of it, as a matter of fact, about 280 yards from the border to West Germany. So close, and yet so far away. They had quite a harrowing experience trying to pick their way back out of that zone, past those trip wires and mines and things. It took them 9 hours, carefully picking every single step that they took. But they did make it out. And then, you would think by this time anybody would give up. Not so. I think that Strelzik was more determined than he ever was. As a matter of fact, They made it back and got to their car with the trailer and the blower and all that and took off. They knew that the balloon would be discovered and the authorities would be on the search for someone trying to escape by balloon. But, as I said, they were determined. So they had to almost start over because they had to abandon the whole gondola and blower system and the balloon itself and everything and left it right in the middle of that no man's zone. Strelzik kind of panicked. He just was really scared, afraid that he was going to be discovered. And he went back to Wetzel, and they agreed that if they were ever going to get out of that country and into freedom, that their only hope was to build another, bigger, better balloon that would take all eight of them out. So Strelzik was able to convince Wesnick to try again. And this time, working together again, they designed a bag with twice the volume. Over 14,000 cubic feet. It measured 65 feet in diameter and 82 feet in height, and it required 13,453 square feet of material. Now, if they had trouble getting what they did before, imagine acquiring that much. What they had to do was to travel from town to town buying a little material here and a little material there and go on in order to not to arouse suspicion. As a matter of fact, they crisscrossed all over East Germany and drove more than 2,000 miles in the process of obtaining that material. But they got it, and Wetzel went back to his creaky sewing machine and started sewing again. And Strelzik built a new blower, a new flamethrower, a new gondola and burner. And within 6 weeks, they were ready to go again. And they took it out, all their apparatus out to that same clearing. Once they had waited for the right wind and weather. And then on September the 15th, they headed for their launch pad to freedom, as they called it, that same little clearing. They turned on the blower, and in just 10 minutes, the balloon was full. In another 3 minutes, the burner, the air within was heated and the burner blazing. And shortly after 2 a.m., they lifted off, taking only 9 minutes to attain an altitude of 6,500 feet and moving 18 miles an hour toward the West German border. Their flight only lasted 28 minutes and they came down. When they did, they were very excited, but they still weren't certain that they had made it into West Germany. So they had the wife and children to kind of hide close to the balloon, and they started looking around and shortly came upon a road, and two constables appeared. They had seen this light in the sky and didn't know what it was, but saw it coming down and had gone to investigate. So the two men popped out and said, "Are we in the West?" And of course the constables replied, "Yes, how'd you get here?" And he said, "By balloon, come see." So they were successful after all those setbacks. Now, this is an interesting tale. And by the way, as the Mother Goose would say it, they lived happily ever after. They did very well there in West Germany, became members of a ballooning club of all things, and enjoyed the rest of their lives in freedom. Let me share with you some lessons that we can learn from this interesting story that I think are very important that we can apply in our Christian life. And the first one, and probably the most important, is the thing that kept them going was they had a goal. They had a precise goal. They had a clearly understandable goal. They knew exactly what they wanted and they sincerely wanted it. It was a driving goal. Their goal drove them to put forth the effort to achieve their mission. And brethren, we also have an overall major goal. We have specific goals in our lives, short-term, relatively shorter-term goals, but we also have a major overall goal just like they did. And that goal is, as we often phrase it, is to make it into God's kingdom. And that goal needs to be as real and important to us as these fellows' goal was to them. And that it needs to be so vivid, making it into God's kingdom and being a part of that government and that family needs to be so vivid in our minds that vision drives us just like these fellows' vision drove them to put forth the effort that was necessary to accomplish it. In 1 Corinthians 2, verse 9, 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 9 and 10, in the New Living Translation it says, "This is what the Scriptures mean when they say, no eye has seen, no ear has heard, and no mind has imagined what God has prepared for those who love Him. But it was to us that God revealed these things by His Spirit. For His Spirit searches out everything and shows us God's deep secret." We need to remind ourselves often that we have been given a very special revelation by God through His Spirit to know, as this phrases it, God's deep secrets and to understand the personal individual calling that God has given each one of us. And in Hebrews 2, in verse 6, Hebrews chapter 2, verses 6 through 8, "What are mere mortals that you should think about them? Or a son of man that you should care for him? Yet you made them only a little lower than the angels and crowned them with glory and honor. You gave them authority over all things." Brethren, the better we can grasp our goal, the better we can realize the reality of it, the better off we're going to be. The more we realize it, then the more we realize the glory and the magnificence of our future, the more we're going to be inspired to put forth the effort that we need to overcome the things that can keep us from making it into God's kingdom. How can we do that? Well, here are some suggestions. Probably, most of all, to keep it in the forefront of our mind and to keep us concentrated on how important it is, we need to study about the world tomorrow. We need to concentrate on it. We need to not let our mind wander off to the millions of distractions that are available to us. It might be a good idea to read and or reread the booklets about God's kingdom. Plus, you remember the book by Mr. Armstrong, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like? Some details there, a little speculation, but certainly a very good graphic picture of what it will be like. That also would be a very good reread. If you don't still have a copy, it can be obtained online. You can either just look it up and read it on your computer or download it, even print it out if you wanted to do that much printing. As a matter of fact, there are a lot of helpful things can be found online. You can even hear some of the Mr. Waterhouse's sermons from years ago about the world tomorrow if you have the time. You get the point. As you read these things, discuss it with your spouse or with your family or other brethren. Meditate about it. Again, doing these things will help you to do your best to prepare for that coming kingdom. To prepare for their mission, Strelzik and Wetzel, secondly, had to study. First of all, they had a goal, a very clear, specific goal that drove them. But we mentioned that they had to go to the library and the used bookstore and study and read everything they could find to learn about ballooning in order to be successful in building and operating one. And brethren, we're the same way. It's very important for us to study and prepare for our job in preparation for the kingdom of God. And we do have a material of other stuff available online as well as in regular print that's available to us. The third point that made them successful was they had drive. As a matter of fact, they were a couple of the most driven guys I've ever heard about. Like thousands or maybe even millions of their fellow countrymen, they were absolutely fed up with their political and social environment. They wanted out badly. They wanted freedom, and they were certainly driven to attain that freedom. Are you fed up with your country? That's getting to be a rather silly question, isn't it? I think we're all pretty well fed up with our political and social environment, and we would like a way out, wouldn't we? Well, thankfully, we know that we do have a way out eventually in God's own time, one way or the other. So there's nothing we can do about the state the country's in and the worsening conditions that are going on, but there is something that we can do about our own individual situations. We know that this is an impossible situation right now in our country, but we know also that there is a better time coming. And it behooves us to acquire the necessary character and knowledge that we need to prepare for that better time that's coming. We need to let the knowledge of that drive us toward accomplishing our goal. Another principle these determined men demonstrated was, this is number four, resourcefulness. Resourcefulness, that means coming up with things, of ways to accomplish your purpose. And they certainly were resourceful. You remember they spent hours obtaining, even days and weeks obtaining the parts and the materials that they needed to construct their escape vehicle. And they drove hundreds of miles to obtain what they needed. When you read the details of all this travel they did and the schemes they put forth in order to acquire what they needed and put it all together, it reads more like a fiction tale than actual events that occurred. Well, brethren, we need to also exercise resourcefulness in our endeavor to accomplish our goals. We all know how valuable that various resources can be to our study and growth, and we use different versions of the Bible to get a better understanding of scriptures. We have our various commentaries and Bible dictionaries that help us to even better understand things. And we take advantage of those things, as well as the church's website and especially the newly developing one that's going to be even so much more impressive and useful. And there are a number of things on there that there's so much on those websites that the one site could keep us busy virtually for the rest of our lives because of all those archived sermons and sermonettes that are there that can be listened to and either downloaded and recorded onto CDs and tapes and that sort of thing. But there are also study papers, numerous articles, lots of previous articles from the Good News Magazine. And then there are other Bible-related websites that can be valuable, like eSword and Bible Hub. If you're not familiar with those things and you do use a computer, They are wonderful. You can now sit right there with one source, that computer in front of you, and obtain things that it would have taken an entire library of hundreds of volumes in the past to get as much, and you could do it a lot faster too. As a matter of fact, as I said, there's just more out there than you could possibly take advantage of. But probably the main lesson for us to learn from these men's experience is perseverance. Boy, did they ever persevere. It would have been so easy for them to just give up when, first of all, remember the first balloon didn't hold air at all. As much effort as they had put into that, it would have been very easy for them to just give up and say, oh, well, it was a good idea, and it just didn't work. But they didn't. And then the hot air apparatus that they had was not strong enough. It simply could not list it. So their first try failed. And a lot of people could give up. Over and over, their efforts were thwarted. Whatever they tried to do, it just did not seem to work. And you remember, Wetzel did give up. He quit. He'd had enough. And that's, to me, that's very understandable. I probably wouldn't have hung on as long as he did under the circumstances. But Strelzik did not. He persevered. And recall, he even went to Wetzel and persuaded him to try again. And the results was they were successful. Both of them made it after that. And that part reminded me of the scripture in James 5:20 that says, you can be sure that whoever brings the sinner back will save that person from death and bring about the forgiveness of many sins. Now, certainly it was to Strelzik's advantage to bring Wetzel back, because it was only with his help that he was able to be successful and to make the escape for him and his family. Brethren, it is hard to keep on keeping on when things are tough, when things just aren't going right, when it's so difficult that nothing just seems to be working out for you. You have your physical ailments, you've got family problems and difficulties, persecution from people that ought to be showing you love and support instead of giving you a hard time. We've all been through those kinds of things, and it's at times like that when our metal is really being tested, when God is taking a look and seeing if we do really have what it takes and if we have enough perseverance to hang in there in spite of all that. Again, I find it very impressive that those two fellows had what it takes, and no matter what failures or disappointments or whatever that they had, they just continued on anyhow. And the final results was that they were successful in obtaining freedom and an entirely new and wonderful and better way of life for themselves and their families. And just like Strelzik and Wetzel we also have a desperate escape to attempt. We alluded to it earlier, but we hope to escape this society one way or the other. We hope to be freed from its slavery and from the influence and the pull of you-know-who that is actually responsible for this society being the way that it is. Our heroes overcame barbed wire, and vicious dogs, and deadly mines, and machine gun patrols, all devices of entrapment thrown up by the East Germans. And likewise, we also must overcome devices thrown up by our enemy, Satan the devil, the things that we just talked about, the trials and tests and persecutions that we must endure. But if we overcome the obstacles in our life, it will be worth it all, because the results will be that we will have a position in the government and the family of God in the world tomorrow and forever. Galatians 6:8 tells us, "For he that sow to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that sows to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap everlasting life." A very clear, plain promise of everlasting life. By the way, did you recognize those principles? Fixing a goal, acquiring education, or studying, having drive, resourcefulness, and perseverance. You know where those come from? Sure, some of you do. From Mr. Armstrong's booklet entitled The Seven Laws of Success. Those were laws when he wrote that booklet. They're still laws. They can still be applied and depended on. And by the way, that booklet itself is available online for reading or downloading. Wetzel and Strelzik succeeded in their endeavor. They had to do it alone. They could not possibly get any extra help. We can be successful in our endeavor, and we have help. We have God's help to depend on. He wants us to make it as badly as we want to make it. And he'll certainly help us if we just simply seek his help and depend upon it. You know, during the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, we concentrated a lot on the scriptures found in John chapter 13, 14, 15, and 16. And in that passage, we find some very valuable instruction and inspiration. And it's good for other times besides just the days of unleavened bread. It can be very good for us to carefully read or reread and meditate on those very important teachings of Christ. And that'll definitely help us to stay in the frame of mind that we need to be successful. National and world events seem to be developing at a record pace. Surely we must be nearing the development of events that are going to be the beginning of the end, as it's sometimes called. That is, the end of the age. Are we ready for that time? A very important question. Are we preparing as frantically as Wetzel and Strelzik did to achieve their destiny? May their fantastic experience inspire us to be determined to do whatever it takes to qualify for our destiny in God's family and His kingdom forever.